The reading today is taken from the book of Matthew, chapter 14, starting at verse 22. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone, but the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and, beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God."
Last Sunday afternoon, at the very end of Channel 4's coverage of the Spanish Grand Prix, one of the TV presenters joked that having now lost a bet, former Formula One driver David Coulthard, or DC to his friends, would now have to jump in the lake fully dressed. DC's response was a surprise. This is what he said. "Well, this is where I'm going to shock everyone, because you know I can actually walk on water." To which the reply was, "Let's see it then, come on." Well, at that point he stalls for time and then the TV coverage finishes. But it was quite the claim to make. It would have been quite a thing to see. Without a doubt, it would have been the best thing on TV that day. Perhaps all week, perhaps even all year. Of course, everyone watching knew he was joking, because you just can't do that. That's why the presenter, Steve Jones, asked to see him do it, because nobody actually can. Well, almost no one. In our Bible passage for today, we have the retelling of the account when Jesus did walk on water, as did his friend Peter, at least for a little bit. And we will get to all of that in just a moment. But first, we should think about how we ended up on the Sea of Galilee in the first place. Last week we were thinking about the time when Jesus miraculously multiplies 5 little loaves and 2 fish to feed thousands and thousands of people. And although everyone's bellies are now full, well, there's no time for a post-dinner nap, because in verse 22, immediately Jesus sends the disciples on ahead in a boat to cross the lake while he dismisses the crowd. We know from the other gospel accounts that this is not quite what the crowd had in mind. They had just had the best day ever. Seeing Jesus healing, hearing Jesus teaching, and then eating the meal Jesus provided. Bodies healed, minds buzzing, stomachs full. They think Jesus is great, which he is. And so they want to make him king there and then. I mean, who wouldn't want a king who provides free food? But Jesus knows that now is not the time for his coronation. He is working to God's timetable, not that of the crowd. For although they think he can provide all they want, Jesus must go to his coronation via the cross, if he is to provide all they and all we really need. The only way Jesus can be the king who saves us is by going the way of the cross first. So rather than hang about, verse 22, Jesus immediately gets things moving. And in the verses that follow, we're given 2 great reminders of what Jesus is like and why the only right response to Jesus is to worship him. First point then, we see Jesus' command over all of creation. It begins there in verse 22. Jesus commands the disciples, obey. They get into the boat and set off across the lake, the Sea of Galilee. And then we see Jesus' authority in sending the crowds away too. Now, sending 12 disciples on their way is one thing. Dismissing a crowd of approximately 12,000 people on your own, well, that's quite another. But it's not just the humans whom Jesus can command, but creation itself. We read how Jesus has been praying alone on the mountain, talking to God in prayer, whilst the disciples, it seems, have been struggling to cross the lake, struggling against the headwind, and struggling for most of the night. We don't know if, as they set off in the boat, they wondered how Jesus was going to catch them up. But verse 24 tells us that by the time he does, they are a considerable distance from land. And verse 25 tells us it's somewhere between 3 and 6 o'clock in the morning. Between 3 and 6 in the morning, when Jesus walks towards them, calm amongst the chaos, it is an extraordinary encounter. And Bishop J.C. Ryle describes it beautifully. He says that liquid surface, which was agitated by the least breath of wind, bears up the feet of our Redeemer. Now, you may be aware, it's been suggested by some, that Jesus was actually just paddling in the shallows here, and the disciples were not out in deep water at all. But John records for us how it was several miles out to sea. It's also been suggested that although they were in deep water, Jesus was walking on a sandbank that they just hadn't seen. Well, that doesn't explain why the boat had not run aground, or how Peter managed to sink, a bit more on that later. More to the point, it doesn't explain the reaction of those in the boat when they see Jesus walking towards them. Now, I think part of the reason people make up alternative explanations for what is going on here is because, humanly speaking, it is preposterous. And yet Matthew tells us, verse 25, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. Verse 26, when the disciples saw Jesus walking on the lake, they realised they were still by the shore now. They realised there was a sandbank stretching out several miles that Jesus was walking on. No. When they see Jesus walking towards them on the lake, we read in verse 26, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and cried out in fear. Now ask yourself this question. Why were they terrified? Why did they think they had seen a ghost? Well, consider this for a moment. The disciples were all Jewish, so from an early age, they'd been taught all about God from the Old Testament. And in the Old Testament, we have verses such as these. So in Psalm 77, we're told how only God can lead a path through the sea. And in Job chapter 9, God alone stretches out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea. In other words, they know that only God can walk on water. So either what's coming towards them is God himself or a ghost. And they draw what is probably most likely conclusion, must be a ghost, because the only other explanation is that it really is Jesus walking on the water towards them. But it can't be Jesus, because that's not humanly possible. Must be a ghost then. And that's clearly pretty scary. Now, back in chapter 8 of Matthew's Gospel, Jesus calms the storm and calms their fears. They're left wondering at the end of that episode, who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? They are terrified then because they think they're going to be shipwrecked and drown. But here in chapter 14, they are terrified for a different reason. They think they're seeing a ghost. And yet Jesus is again swift to calm their fears. Verse 27, Jesus immediately says to them, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. And then almost as an aside, once Jesus is back in the boat with them, there in verse 32, the wind dies down. Again, if we turn back to Psalm 135, we realise that's something that only God can do. Only God commands the clouds and the lightning and the rain and the wind. I don't know if you've ever had the experience of doing a puzzle with a small child. So in order to give them a helping hand, you give them the next piece and it's the right way round and it's the right way up. But sometimes they take it, they spin it round or they turn it over, and that just makes the whole thing much harder. Then they're struggling to fit the piece of the puzzle where it should go. Now, often in the gospel accounts, these historical accounts of Jesus' life, Jesus hands his followers a piece of the puzzle as to who he really is. But they take it and they twist it or they flip it. Occasionally, however, they get it right. And here in the boat, the disciples seem to receive that puzzle piece from Jesus and slot it straight into place. Verse 33, those in the boat worship Jesus, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." Now, sometimes it can be quite tricky to work out from a Bible passage what the application can be to see how this applies to me today. But this one is a bit of a gimme. Their response should be our response. With the help of Matthew, we are to see Jesus walking on the water, see that that's something only God can do. And we are to not only understand that Jesus is the Son of God, but worship him as the Son of God. For he is truly awesome. He commands creation. He is the one in control over all of creation. There is no one like him. So it's good to ask ourselves, is this Jesus the Jesus I worship? Is the Jesus I worship this powerful, this magnificent, this glorious? Do I praise Jesus for who he is, thank him for what he has done, desire him to be glorified, and trust him for my own and others' future well-being? Okay, Andy, okay, you might say, so Jesus is clearly very powerful, and I get that I don't need to fear him, but I do need to worship him. But there is a problem, because in verse 31, Peter is rebuked by Jesus for having little faith. And although I may not have been as keen as Peter to jump out of the boat, I'm pretty certain that if I had, I would have sunk as well. And probably more quickly than Peter did. Well, that brings us to our second heading. Jesus' catching of Peter. I think this is a truly wonderful scene. We've already learned how there's no need to fear because Jesus is in control. There's no need to doubt because Jesus is in control. But when we do fear, when we do doubt, Jesus catches us. Now, to be fair to Peter, he starts off pretty well. He asks Jesus permission, demonstrating that he understands that Jesus is in command. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not sure that my response to seeing Jesus walking on the water in the middle of a storm would be to ask to join him. But Peter does, perhaps remembering how just the previous day he'd learned that when Jesus invites you to do the seemingly impossible, feed thousands, he also enables you to do it. And so Peter humbly asks to be invited onto the water. Jesus calls him. I'll pick it up from verse 28. "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," Jesus said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. Do you see what we're learning from these verses? The wonderful news is that in answer to the question, can I trust Jesus if I step out of the boat? If I accept his invitation, can I trust him? The answer is yes, you can, because even when we feel like we are sinking and we cry for help, Jesus will catch us. Jesus will save us. That is wonderful news indeed. It's worth pointing out, I think, that when Peter cries out to be saved, he's not asking Jesus to save him from his sins at that point. He's not asking for forgiveness here. He's asking for a rescue from drowning. Now, it is wonderfully true that Jesus, the one who walks on water, is also the one who will save us from our sins by dying on the cross in our place. We just need to ask. But here is the picture of a follower of Jesus, who in this case, distracted by the storm all around him, where he takes his eyes off Jesus and focuses on the threat instead. As one writer comments, fear has taken away his memory, and alarm confused his reason. You may be able to recall times in your own life where that's happened, different circumstances, but similar nonetheless. Well, the result of Peter is that he starts to sink, quite literally. But Jesus is not going to just sit and watch, nor will he walk on by. Rather, verse 31, immediately Jesus reaches out his hand and catches Peter. Now, hopefully by this point, Hebrews 12, verse 1 is ringing in your ears from a few weeks ago, where we were encouraged to fix our eyes on Jesus. We're not going to find ourselves in the middle of the Sea of Galilee, literally sinking. And yet we will find ourselves distracted or doubting, perhaps fearful. We'll feel like we're sinking, so overwhelmed by what we see or hear or the experiences all around us. We forget the words of Jesus, "Take courage, it is I." But it is at precisely those moments we too must cry out, knowing that Jesus will catch us as well. As Jesus says in John's Gospel, chapter 6, "I shall lose none of all the Father has given me, but raise them up on the last day." It's the promise to catch us when we fall, to grab us when we're sinking. We have a worked example of this here in Matthew 14. When we sink, Jesus catches us. When we stumble, he picks us up. When we feel tired, he gives us rest. When we are weak, he makes us strong. When we wander, he brings us back. For sure, Jesus' correction to Peter is one designed to encourage Peter to keep trusting in Jesus, yes, to not doubt, yes. But we mustn't miss the timing. Jesus catches him, Jesus rescues him, Jesus helps him back in the boat, calms the storm, and then teaches him. It is this Jesus who walks on water and catches us when we fall, whom they worship at the end of the passage. "Truly you are the Son of God." May we be those who go and do likewise. Amen.